It's Dear Instructional Designer, episode 56. Hey, everybody, and welcome back to Dear Instructional Designer, the show about the instructional design journey. I'm your host, Kristen Anthony. This season, we are concentrating on the journey into freelancing as an instructional designer. This episode, we are back with Wes Atkinson, co-founder and lead technical consultant at Appeteer Limited, the makers of the Evolve authoring tool and Bloom LMS. Last episode, Wes and I talked about the challenges surrounding instructional design freelancers. This episode, I'd like to shift focus to looking a bit more at Evolve as one of the tools in our tool belt to solve some of those problems. I'm always interested in free and low-cost tools for myself as an independent contributor, and I know that you all are too. So let's talk a little bit more about Evolve and Bloom as tools. So Wes, one of the things that I noticed right off the bat when I was looking at Evolve, I saw that the pricing structure was very different from what I like to call the big three authoring tools, at least here in the US. How did you guys sort of choose that as a pricing structure as opposed to, you know, the way the other guys do it?
I guess in e-learning, there's a lot of tools out there that are quite expensive, particularly authoring tools are getting more expensive. And when you move into cloud, you move into SaaS. They go up every year. That's what SaaS does. That's how they make the money. Subscriptions always increase. For us, we had to pick a price that we thought was fair and not in line with other authoring tools, but in line with other tools that you could use on the web. So if you think about those other tools, they're actually priced a lot less. But the moment you put e-learning on something, suddenly the price triples. So we thought, let's price it at a level of a consumer product. So something like in line with Adobe Creative Cloud, something like that, prices that people are used to paying. That was where I guess the $30 a month price came in. You've got to price it in a way that is attractive for companies as well, particularly smaller companies.
Is that working for you all, pricing it, you know, sort of the same way, no matter the type of customer?
Yeah, it's really important to do that. And the other thing is, we couldn't afford to do this. So other companies have tried to do this. I had a discussion yesterday with somebody on LinkedIn about low pricing models in e-learning. And a lot of people are saying, well, we remember all the guys that tried to do this and their companies went bust. The only way you can do this, and the reason our competitors can't lower their prices, is you have to have a small org that can do things very effectively. And your product has to be written in a clever way that it can scale. So am I going to, so fair enough, I can support 100 customers. Can I support 1,000 or 10,000 if I get really popular? And the answer is yes. But obviously on that scale, you know, 10,000 people paying $30 a month is quite profitable. So it's that thing is that you have to be able to do it at scale.
We're going to transition into sort of the type of tool that Evolve is. And one of the things that I really like about it and tools like it are that they break or at least allow you to break that PowerPoint slide metaphor and use design that's more akin to the web. And so I'm wondering, do you all find that other IDs notice that as a part of the design of Evolve? That's really, for me, one of the things that sets us apart.
Yeah, it can be a real challenge for some IDs. So say somebody's used Articulate for 10 years, they come in and say, I just don't like Evolve because it doesn't do this. I get so much more freedom in Articulate. And to some degree, they're right. They do. But the beauty of Evolve is in its rigid structure. So in a sense of you can have 2 to 3 things per width. And that isn't, you know, to restrict you in the sense of your design, because you can still get an on-brand course out of it that looks identical to your website brand and your company brand. But what it also does is by almost having a bit more of a rigid structure to the design in terms of your layout and things like that, is that I can guarantee that's going to work on multiple devices with different screen sizes, different viewpoints, whereas an Articulate is going to be one fixed slide. To go back to your question about breaking the mold of that PowerPoint slide metaphor, PowerPoint had its day where every instructor led training course was a PowerPoint. You learned off that, then you got a copy of the PowerPoint at the end. What we do is we, obviously it's for multi-device, so I might be looking at course material before and after the course, and it doesn't matter what device I need to view it on, I can do it on any, and your course is going to look beautiful. So that's why we do it, and it's more in line with the scrolling and that kind of user experience that people are expecting now.
I still find that sometimes people are sort of afraid of the scroll. You know, they feel like everything has to be what we sort of still use this newspaper metaphor. It has to be above the fold. Do you find that that's an issue for people? You know, you said that sometimes people, when they're moving from something like an Articulate to an Evolve.
Interesting you say that. So you can actually create that PowerPoint-esque style, but in responsive design with Evolve, where you have, you know, everything above the fold, no scrolling. I'm literally just looking at content and clicking the next button. But we do it in a way that actually makes it friendly to the end user. So let me give you an example. I do not know one single person that uses the web and accesses something on BuzzFeed or another website where it says 10 things that successful people do. They click on it and they have to click next after every single tip, every single number. So if you tip one, I have to click next. No one likes doing it, yet we keep doing it in e-learning. That's the example I usually give and say, clicking next is annoying. What makes it even more annoying from an e-learning context is I can't click next. I have to do something that then unlocks it, that then shows me another page, but I have no idea how many pages more I'm going to get. So there's no index to say page 1 of 25. It's just I'm continually going until I get to the end and I don't know where the end structure is. The PowerPoint metaphor, the PowerPoint slide put into it in web design for the purposes of e-learning can be very bad user experience. So we kind of say that scrolling is great for single page courses with a scroll. If you want to break up your course structure across multiple pages, that's fine too. And you can have multiple scrolling pages or pages that don't scroll. But here's the things in Evolve that we're not going to let you do. So we're not going to let you completely lock down the structure so you can't see. There's always going to be a content so you can see what's coming up, even if the pages are locked. And then you explain to people during the user, we've locked these pages for you to do something first. So it's that kind of thing where you can still have the things that people in e-learning desire for their courses, but you do it in a way that's not annoying to the user experience. And so we try and put that into the tool and give you tips and stuff as you're building so that you don't mess up.
Where did you all sort of get your opinions from? Did you do user testing? Is it just from sort of all of the web design research that's out there?
Two of the guys that work with me came from an e-learning agency, and they were banging their heads against their desks every day because they're being asked to do stuff. Everyone expects e-learning in a browser. It is in a browser. You're not going to get away from that. In order to deliver it at scale, it has to be in a browser. Yet the patterns in e-learning that some instructional designers, not to bash them too much, but some of them do, they want to do things that they've done 10 years ago, which the browser doesn't even allow. So I had somebody that wanted to play audio when the browser starts, guaranteed. Chrome locked that down because it's annoying to play audio, yeah. But I've still got clients going mad because Evolve Content won't play audio. But I'm saying it's the browser that's stopping you. Yeah, but is there not a way you can work around it? So the developers, they were kind of like, we don't want to do this. We don't want to do that. We're basically not going to do anything that the rest of the web doesn't do. So that was the idea behind it. So instead of trying to squeeze in that experience you had, like people putting in ridiculous amounts of animations that a PowerPoint slide could handle, but in a web browser is slow, it's janky, it's jerky in the web browser, it's stopping that sort of stuff. So we have animations in Evolve, but they're subtle. They're nice. They focus the learner on what they're looking at rather than to look at something like pulsing hotspots on a page so they can see they need to click on something rather than things flying from the left and from the right and things like that. The opinions come from I guess, some of it is we've got an instructional designer that actually works for us to tell us what we should put in our tool. And we've also got two developers that they've developed thousands of courses by hand outside of an authoring tool and what the clients asked for. And so they've been there, they've lived it, they know what's annoying, and they know the pain for the developer as well, what they're expected to do. So it's about putting that and stopping those mistakes for other people.
I am just now sort of completing a Udacity mobile nano degree experience and sort of all of those sorts of things that you were talking about, janky animations, being performant, those are the sorts of things that you learn about. You know, even if all IDs don't want to code or don't need to code, we had Joseph Suarez on here a while back and he said, you know, all e-learning developers are web developers. So we actually need to understand things like, yeah, Chrome does not allow you to just play audio. Whether or not you code, you need to sort of understand how the web works and how browsers work. Something that's near and dear to my heart is web accessibility and designing for accessibility from the outset. And I really think that we have a duty to build that into our instructional design the same way that we really want to build in interactivity. And you talked about some of these features last episode, but this time, you know, let's sort of dive deep. How does Evolve help IDs build accessible courseware?
So before, it didn't. So our courses were accessible to an extent. You could get by on a screen reader. And then we doubled down and we thought we really need to focus on this. So on every single tab now in Evolve, if you're building something, there's like an accessibility tab where you can go into it and configure things specifically for that interaction. So let's say I'm doing a drag and drop. You can then go into there and put in descriptive text to say, you're coming up to something that is a drag and drop. We also have little hints and tips in Evolve to say, this component might not be the best one for accessible users. Yeah, so what we did is basically place it in the tool next. So things that enhance the accessible experience, place it within the tool alongside the stuff that you're doing day to day. So if you're attaching a graphic into Evolve or image, then right underneath alt text, that's what you have to, it's a blank field. I might as well put something there. I don't want to leave it blank. So it's that sort of thing, building it around the experience rather than it just being something you do at the end. So it's everyone talks about mobile first. We talk about accessible first. And likewise, even if you don't put on all those labels, we had to put it into the core of a framework that you can tab to everything. And in the absence of there being an ARIA label, we just get the screen reader to read out display title and things like that. So we put in almost polyfills if people are a bit sloppy with their accessibility.
What screen readers did you guys test with, if you don't mind my asking?
There's quite a few out there. Jaws is the most popular one. We did a test with that. But then we went and did deep dives into all the tools that were free. So ChromeVox, for example, in Chrome, we tested with that. There's a bunch of others on our blog. But ChromeVox was the one I most tested myself personally. But we, rather than us testing them, we then got a client who literally just creates accessible content. And we passed it to her and said, look, we'll give you a complimentary license to Evolve if you can tell us where we're going wrong with accessibility. So, you know, it was worth the money in terms of actually not having the money and saying, right, have a few licenses to Evolve for free for your team and just tell us how to do this thing right. So not only did we, you know, our own testing and reading the Section 508 requirements, we also got an expert that had been doing this a long time to go through our tool and say, no, this isn't good enough. You need to put this in here. It would be great if you could do this. This is the bonus feature. So, and we did all of it and we implemented it. It took us 4 months, but we did it properly. The other thing we did is with the legislation that's out there and the guidance, we also, so with the W3C, they give you almost like an Excel spreadsheet to say, these are all the things you need. We reproduce that Excel spreadsheet, and next to each one is how you might achieve that thing that's slightly unclear, how you might achieve that in Evolve and where you can find that setting. If you're up against, you know, an RFQ or RFP and it's like, this must be accessible, then we can give you case and point reference to here's how you achieve it with this document.
Is that somewhere on you all's website, or is that something that you just give to a client if they ask for it?
I think it's on our blog, and it's also on the training tab on evolveauthoring.com.
That is just really useful. The specification is sometimes it's not clear what actually applies or how to do it.
Yeah, so it's so important as well. I also should plug learnevolve.com, which is our sister site, which is courses written in Evolve, and you'll find a lot of stuff on accessibility there as well.
I remember reading one of the tutorials you all have for Evolve is publishing your course in such a way that it is a progressive web app. And for those of you out there who don't know, progressive web apps are web applications that are built in such a way that they are usable offline. You can add them to your phone or tablet home screen, just like a native application. And they have a number of other technical features as well. And I know that XAPI and offline capabilities are, they go hand in hand, and they're both things that you all have built into Evolve. And so my first question is, how did you all decide that that was important to do, that progressive web apps and XAPI were important features?
Yeah, I think it's because no one client is the same. So, you know, you might have the most technical company. So we work with these massive companies that say, well, actually, we have a great LMS. We're going to put everything in there. So we need it in XAPI, or we need it in SCORM, for example. So they might have an LRS as well on the side of their LMS. They've got everything, but they need both. And then they say, oh, by the way, we have 50 salespeople. They're out on the road and they need the courses offline. We had to be in a way that, you know, if you needed your course in three different ways, you can just click publish and click the options for those. Likewise with progressive apps. If one didn't work, then it kicks in with the other method straight away. So we decided it was important to do because we had people based it off the questions of our product. So when people said, can I view my courses offline? can I use these anywhere outside of an LMS because I can't afford an LMS? Or can I use these in XAPI because we're bleeding edge? We like to do everything that's out there. We like to do all the buzzwords. So we had to cater for absolutely everything.
How does having a progressive web app, how has that maybe helped a particular client?
We had a client where they didn't, that they had a bunch of learners that couldn't access the LMS. So they were outside the organization. And what they needed to do was be able to access the course, but also prove that they could complete it. So some of them had older devices, some of them had newer, so I had to work everywhere. And when they used it, it actually generated a PDF at the end. Now, generating PDF sounds like that's basic, that's what all courses do or things like that, or that's what other courses can do. But there was no server at the other side. So we had to work out a way that at the end of the course, without any assisted technology around it, that it could generate that PDF. Yeah, so everything we do when you generate an Evolve course could work without the server, so without the LMS, and just work online or offline. That meant that their course could go out to everyone, not just people in their organization, actually people outside of it as well. That helps clients and I guess Evolve users to use it anywhere without having to, you know, produce a second course somewhere else in like a different authoring tool or just on their website or something like that. It means they can use one product and accomplish everything.
The Torrance Learning Team, they did this project with a nonprofit where they sent out these courses and they were XAPI enabled and they had to be usable offline. And then once the courses were online, they would send the XAPI statement because they were going to be used in places where there was a lot of spotty connection. Does the sort of Evolve offline progressive web app, does that have that sort of ability?
So that works very well if you have an offline app that they can download the courses into. And so it can send the statements to the app and then the app does the syncing. But standalone, the courses, you know, wouldn't hold on to that information. One thing we do have is local storage. So what that does is it uses the cache on your browser, and that worked quite well with SCORM. So if you got disconnected or you lost your progress from your LMS, it would keep the progress in your browser. So next time you came back on, you kept everything. And then when you reach the end and you send your completion statement, that's when it sends out all the information because it would have that all in your browser cache. So using our local storage feature is quite handy because it's caching everything there. It's harder to do with XAPI because the way in which the spec is written, I guess, is almost like it's always going to be connected to something. So that, yeah, there are really good offline implementations of it, and it's something we'll look into. But, and you know, I'm the first to admit Evolve doesn't do everything.
For those of you who don't know, again, local storage, that is a feature of your browser. A lot of HTML5 games use it to store your high score, for example. So that's something that you can use when somebody is offline to store some data that they can use again and again, even if they're offline. So these are important concepts to understand. You know, what can your tool do? So let's talk styling. I said a bit ago that I love not having to design text when I use tools like this, but there's often a desire, and you mentioned this, to design the theme of an experience to match your organization's branding or to just, you know, evoke a certain emotion. And so how does coding and or CSS work in Evolve? As a developer, what can I touch? What can I change?
What we do and how it works is you can't put a single bit of your own code or scripting into Evolve. And the reason we say that is because, one, there is and people are getting more savvy about it and caring more about it. Adding your own JavaScript, adding your own CSS to some degree can be a huge security issue in terms of we can't validate your code in any way. And it can also break a lot of stuff. So it can be a support nightmare. I mean, I've seen open source tools that allow that, and then take half a day of a developer's time or the community's time on an issue that was just their script that they put in that was two lines. So from our point of view, it's a headache. It's a security issue. The other thing is, even if you're the best coder, and there's going to be a lot of IDs out there saying, "Hey, my code's always going to work. How dare he say that?" But you've got this whole thing of I can guarantee when you're publishing an Evolve course, that is going to work in every browser. And if it doesn't, I'll fix it very, very quickly. If you put your own CSS in there, Chrome upgrades, and it's not vanilla CSS and it all breaks, that's on you. And I can't vouch for that. And neither can, you know, your clients, etc. But if you know, the browser's updated, we're testing beta versions of browsers and stuff before they release to the general public. Chrome do this, Chrome Canary, for example. So we can be ahead of the curve, and we can own that end to end, and that's our responsibility. So it takes that responsibility off of you. But in terms of what you can touch and change, we don't ignore that you need to be able to change everything. So what we did is we mapped 10,000 lines of CSS into a usable user interface. There are not 10,000 switches. We've done that quite collated it into quite a nice user interface. It still takes a couple of hours to design your theme, but you're doing it without having to touch a line of code. You can change everything or near enough everything in an evolved theme, so you can match your brand exactly. And also, it's a consumer interface. So if I want to add a curve on that button, if I want to change what's called the border radius, for example, I can do all of that. And we've even used some of the CSS terminology for the more technical parts so that you can, right, I know what that is. That's what that does. So we've done that. Now, we also say, and this is always an evolved promise, if there is something you want to change in the UI that you can't change, and you're just like, I just want to type a line of code, tell us what it is. Maybe even send us an example of a code that you would have used, and we'll give you the user interface to do that. We'd rather enhance our product than you feel like you can't do it in Evolve. And we'd rather do that than you have to use your own code for all the reasons I stated earlier.
Last time you mentioned Jampan, and I got on there and I actually got a ping from somebody. They mentioned that there are Evolve themes. So am I right in thinking that, I can create this theme once and use it in multiple courses?
Exactly. Yeah. So that you can create 50 courses, then create a theme and apply it to all 50 courses as well. So so you can reuse the themes. You can create a copy of those themes, make a slight tweak for a new customer. You can have one course and apply the theme depending on the customer you're publishing it for. And Evolve themes just work. So if I wrote one course and then wanted to give it to like 10 clients with different brands, I could create all 10 brands and then hot swap those courses or those brands between that course without affecting any of the content. Took us 6 months to develop that theming tool, so you can literally design it to anything you want. And the UI was so important, because if you give somebody an awful UI for creating their own brand, then they're just not going to use your tool. So we really thought about this. And again, it goes back to those two developers that I've got, the relearning developers. I thought, how can we make this scalable? How do we do this so this is in the product, not that it's a service? And I don't know one authoring tool in the cloud that doesn't provide a theming service. So you can't just go in and create a theme for like a brand with a high-end identity. You have to use their service. In this tool, you don't. You can do it all yourself, and you can do it all for that small price per month.
So, Wes, as we start to wrap up here, continuing education, certification, degrees, those are all topics that IDs from all points in the journey are constantly thinking about. And one of the things that the people I talk to regularly have been concerned about is that balance between learning solid instructional design principles and also being able to be job ready and make stuff, which most ID jobs require. And I know that you all have gotten involved with some professional development and portfolio building. And I'd like for you to talk to us a little bit about how you all are supporting that space, that professional development and portfolio building space for freelancers and just newbie instructional designers.
Yeah, I think it's a really good question, because, you don't want to insult the ID industry in a way and have a tool that does that by saying you don't need to be an ID to use this tool, because you can create content in Evolve and it can not have any, I guess, learning methodology behind it. And I know learning methodologies and things like that are always up for debate. People say, no, this doesn't work. It's proven this model that's 30 years old does no longer apply to organizations, or it never has. So there's a minefield out there in terms of what we recommend. We also saw a vendor recommend a course on how to build, in this tool with learning styles. And then they got absolutely slated on social media for even suggesting the learning styles was a thing. So we try and stay, I guess, methodology agnostic in terms of what we recommend. What we've tried to do is, I guess, do it in a way that you can almost storyboard in the tool if you want to do that. And there's easier ways, manually convert your storyboards into a course. Not to use too much ID terminology in the tool, so that if you're building e-learning for the first time, so if you're a trainer, you're not an instructional designer, and you've been told you need to make this an online course, then you're not going to have that wording, technology, or jargon behind it. So we basically made Evolve into that consumer product for you to create a course. But if you do have that ID knowledge, then you go further into it. The other thing is obviously we're creating that freelancer relationship with Juanpan, so we make it an even lower price point for freelancers. And, you know, you then got your area in Evolve to create your portfolio and show people. We've also got the type of user in Evolve called reviewer users. So if you as a client want to come in and view the course before it goes out to the org, normally freelancers don't have that luxury of having that area where you can send the client to review the course and stuff, whereas Evolve has all of that. So you don't have to rely on lots of tools to achieve one job. So it's basically putting enough in the product that it can support all of that.
Just having those review tools where someone could even, you know, slide by slide or page by page say, this is my feedback. That seems to be a bigger thing with authoring tools. And it's actually really, really useful.
I think, you know, that's it's not just having to physically put some files on a server that's the problem. It's then that communication. So you're like, well, just to let you know, here's the link for that. Oh, you can't get the link to work. Oh, no, you need to put a slash at the end. Oh, no, that's the old version of the course. You've got the new link here. And it's all that. So what we do is, you know, by managing that review process, it automatically emails them with a login for them to log into the system and see it. They can then leave comments on it. They then, when you stand up a second review, it's like the second version of the course and it's updated the link for them, and so they know that does all the emailing for them, so you don't have to physically write an email. So it automatically, when you click send to this person, it will send them that link in Evolve where they can review. So it's kind of handling a lot of that client communication for you, the awkwardness and the links not working, and if their links don't work, then they can log a ticket with us and we handle it for you. So it's kind of helping you out in that respect as well. All the stuff that is outside, you know, people say, right, there was one instructional designer. He said, well, actually only 10% of my job is instructional design. The other 90% is dealing with clients. You know, it's taking some of that 90% for you.
You all are also partnered with a university right now. Is that right?
Lots of them, yes. So they're leading a course at the Institute, yeah. So Cork Institute, and it's a whole course covering instructional design, and there's about 20 people on that course. So we provide a free, I'd like to say a complimentary, but free Evolve license to all of them. It's great because we're helping out at uni, and then for those people when they come out with that, they can then get a license with Evolve. And they've got a tool that they can use that's outside of it. Often, you know, I remember when I was in college and stuff like that, and I left, it's like, I really want to be able to code in this, but the software that I was using at uni is like 200 quid. I don't have that. So it's like when they get out of there, they have that product they can then go off and use, and they've used it for, you know, what, 3 years plus.
You know, what's the story behind how you guys got involved with that?
Some guy just said, I'm going to be using your product. Can we do a deal? Because I'm going to have quite a few users to it. I said, scrap the deal, just have it for free. So you know, it's making sure that these people using it have got a tool to use. And we're way behind that. You know, it's not all about making a profit in our company. It's not about making a profit at all, really. It's just, I mean, we do make a profit, but it's kind of, that's product of what we do. You know, we make a profit because we help people be successful, because we're making sure that the product is gold and the customer is first. And, you know, that's a byproduct that we get some money out of it. That's great. So that's the thing, really. So we're saying that, you know, 20 of you have got an Evolve license complimentary. But when you go on into your careers, you're going to remember that product and use it. So long game, that's what we're in it for. And we get to help you out as well.
Goodwill goes such a long way. We had Christy Tucker on the show a couple of episodes back, and she was talking about how, you know, just helping people, that is a tool for growing your business right there. Just like being genuinely helpful.
Yeah. And you know, it's hard because it's not always immediately reciprocal, if at all sometimes, but it's, you know, having that paying it forward is I guess what people say. So it's all about doing that for us.
Awesome. Well, thank you so much for being on the show, Wes. Everybody, we will have links to some of the Evolve things that we talked about. Wes, before we go, I have two more questions for you. One, what would be your top advice for freelancers as we sort of move and grow and change?
Changes all the time, depending on what podcast I listen to. Get a good accountant. That's my first one. I've seen some people, you know, make some fantastic courses, and then they worry about that sort of stuff long term. Don't forget to pay yourself as well. It's very important. That would be like the outside of the industry thing. But in terms of broader, obviously be nice to people. There's lots of bits of advice. But in terms of like instructional design, of old advice, I would say make sure you've got a decent portfolio. And, you know, clients are there at the end of the day to help themselves. They're hiring you for a charge. try and negotiate that you get something at the end of it. You're not just going from job to job and getting paid at the end of the day. You need something that is almost like a legacy. This is what I did here. Otherwise, that's 6 months, you know, although you got paid for it, it's a bit of a waste. Try and make sure that you can always use it in your portfolio. You feel a bit embarrassed asking because you're getting paid to do it, but don't be, because most people will say yes, but they can't say yes after the project's done. So that would be my one advice. Make sure you've always got something that you can carry forward from that project. I guess the second is use Evolve. That's one of my main bits of advice. But yeah, and you know, likewise, expect the most from your supplier. They're there to help you. So, you know, if you're stuck on something, regardless of whether you use Evolve or not, if you're stuck, you need to just ask, and it will help you get better in the tool as well. You know, there is great communities around these products, but don't be afraid to ask the product team themselves, and also give as much feedback as possible. Because, you know, what we do, we might, you know, make a small change in the product that will make, you know, building the next 100 courses 25% quicker. So always feedback as well.
Great advice. And sort of the second question is, once again, feel free to give all the shout outs you want. Where can people catch up with you?
So Wes Atkinson UK, W-E-S, Atkinson UK on Twitter. You'll find me on LinkedIn. I'm the guy with the freckles. And then evolveauthoring.com as well, and bloomplatform.com. It's so much easier to use those rather than trying to spell Aperture. So you can find us there.
Thank you again for coming on the show. This has been super fun. I really appreciate it.
No, thank you very much.